If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
It's Monday in Missouri, and there's still uncertainty over Governor Eric Greitens' future. Over the weekend, he conducted several interviews regarding his admission that he had an extramarital affair before he was governor. Among other things, Greitens once again denied to the Associated Press that he took a photo of a woman to prevent her from revealing the infidelity.
Did you actually take a photo of her?
Yeah, as I said, this is a consensual relationship, David. And there was no blackmail. There was no threat of using a photograph for blackmail. And there was no violence. The mistake that I made, as I said, was that I was engaged in a consensual relationship with a woman who wasn't my wife. And beyond that, everyone has asked for privacy. And again, we would ask you to respect that.
He also reiterated that he would not be resigning, something that some members of his own party have urged him to do. One of those Republicans is State Representative Marsha Haefner, a four-term GOP lawmaker from South St. Louis County. Haefner joined the Politically Speaking podcast to talk about her strong statement against the governor staying in office and how his decision not to resign affects the ability of the legislature to do its job.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, a candid conversation with the Show Me State's biggest political newsmakers.
I'm Jason Mersenbaum.
And I'm Joe Manis.
That's Eric Greitens, Navy SEALs running for governor, and I'm really, really glad to be on with you, Jason and Joe.
I'm going to push back on these regulators.
I'm doing this for the people.
I was encouraged along the way, not just by my family, but by a lot of teachers and professors, and knew when I was in college that I would run for office someday.
We're very excited about the prospect of having some more free market solutions.
Even though after the conversation, I still might not agree.
We want our listeners to get a real sense of what drives these people.
They're actually people with a story to tell.
And welcome to the Politically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, Jason Rosenbaum, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me today in our studios in St. Louis is
colleague Joe Manis.
And we welcome back for the second time our special guest today,
Representative Marsha Haefner,
a state representative who represents a portion of South St. Louis County. But before we pepper you with questions, just remind our listeners the boundaries of your district and of course what number it is.
It's District 95, which is Telegraph Road. It's very furthest south you can be in St. Louis County. I adjoin Jefferson County, and then all the way from Telegraph over to I-55.
So,
and how long have you been the
representative? This is my last term, my
Amazing.
Eighth year.
I remember when you were elected, because you were a Republican that took over for a Democrat, and even despite the ups and downs of the election cycle, I think you've won all of your elections pretty decisively, even though I think Oakville area used to be pretty swing district. I guess it's just changed a lot in the last 6 or 7 years.
I think it has, and I think maybe my strong numbers could be that just I've been a very visible part of the community all my adult life, and a lot of people know me from my business.
Now, oh yeah, and explain your business.
We have a garden center on Telegraph Road, and my mother-in-law had a produce stand on Telegraph Road where a lot of people recognize the name from that.
So if you need any garden or produce related things.
Well, the produce stand is
no longer there.
Well, at least garden stuff.
Sure.
Okay. Well, but your name has been in the news for other reasons the last few days. Representative Haefner was among the first legislators on the Republican side to publicly come out and call for Governor Eric Greitens to step down after the controversy over his acknowledgement that he had an affair in 2015. With a woman. There is some controversy about it because her ex-husband taped the woman unknowingly, and on the tape, she appears to say that Eric Greitens had photographed her as she was undressed and that he threatened to make that public if she ever talked about the affair. She has not talked about it. The governor denies all that part. He admits the affair but denies all that. But that said, you were among the first Republicans who said he's got to go. Do you want to talk a little bit about that so we can have the backdrop for then going forward?
Well, a lot of the criticism for my statement that I believe he needs to resign was because he had an affair before he was elected governor. What's the big deal? But it wasn't the affair. It's what happened after the affair that I find troublesome. The potential of a cover-up, the potential of a threat, the potential of a bribe. And then when you add to that, that one of his staff members, an attorney, contacted the attorney for the ex-husband who brought the story forward, I find that to be very troublesome and somewhat unethical that a paid state employee is doing investigating for this personal matter. There were just other things that came forward after the revelation of the affair that made me decide this was the right thing to say at the right time.
Now, over the last weekend, the governor has done several interviews, one print with AP, one radio with Mark Reardon on Camo X, one TV on Channel 2 Fox News. Interested in your take if those have influenced your decision since then, and then we'll go forward.
Well, I think the governor is vehemently denying the charges, which I understand. I think we're in a situation right now is who do you believe? The woman on the audio tape or the governor who has said for the record that none of those other things happened? So I think we're in a situation where if there were to be an investigation, I would think the governor would welcome that to clear the air and let us move forward. Until we get the right answers, I don't know how we move forward.
I want to read part of your statement because one of the reasons why it struck me was, as I mentioned before the show, you have not vehemently criticized the governor in the past. You are the chairperson, I believe, of the Fiscal Review Committee, which
yes.
which is a very important committee in the House. You have a reputation that is pretty solid within the Missouri House, as does Representative Kathy Conway, who also called for the resignation. But I was also struck just because the statement itself was just came across very strongly. And I don't mean that pejoratively. It's just that it was notable. This is part of it. Eric Greitens was elected governor based on campaign promises of ethics, transparency, family values, and ridding our state of, quote, corrupt politicians who stood in the way of moving Missouri forward. He's attacked good people to elevate his status while taking credit for the work of others, and now we're faced with this embarrassing situation. In a letter he wrote 2 years ago, he stated it's, quote, our duty is to kill the snakes. As a public servant, it's my duty to ask for Governor Greitens to resign immediately and allow Missouri to move on, move forward, and get back to work. So that wasn't like a ambiguous or subtle statement. I don't know if I want to spend a lot of time like asking you what prompted to use that type of strong language, but I would like you to take this opportunity why you feel that this situation touched you on such a visceral level like this.
It really mattered to me to make a strong statement because anyone that knows me knows where I stand on things. I didn't want to be kind of ambiguous about my feelings on this. I feel that this is now a big distraction for those of us that are there in Jefferson City to get some important work done. And until this story goes away, it will continue to be a distraction to the work that we're supposed to be doing.
Was your reaction a tied at all to the controversy a few years ago when then State House Speaker John Deal had to step down? I know there was a lot of women legislators who had told him he had to go for about a day or so when he was trying to hold on to his job because of his admitted inappropriate communications with a intern.
Not at all. I try to look at situations, especially when I speak out, isolate them and just deal with the facts that are in front of us now. It was the same thing with the Warren Love statement that I made during the ethics committee hearing that whatever we did with the senator that said something we didn't like had nothing to do with what we do with a House member and what I thought would be an appropriate reprimand.
I do want to touch on another thing that you alluded to in the statement I just read. Even before this situation, the governor and the Republican legislature had been in conflict over a number of things. And some of it actually got personal when the governor criticized specific state senators on the Republican side over things, or had his 501c4 that's connected to him attack some sitting legislators as well. It's noticeable to me that there are not a lot of people defending the governor at all, even in the House. And I'm not going to say that people were defending Deal
his behavior. But I do kind of recall he was remembered a little bit more magnanimously afterward. Do you think one of the reasons why he's not getting a lot of support are those pre-existing conflicts where he attacked the legislature? And that's kind of an example of, you know, using that type of tactics comes back to harm you when you're in a controversy like this.
I'm sure it has a lot to do with some of the things that we're hearing now and the lack of support for the governor. We're supposed to be a team, and a lot of us came before him and kind of blazed a trail to make his governorship possible. And I have never understood why we don't work as a team, why we don't communicate, why we're being called names like third graders when we're there to do a job. And I think that we accomplished a lot considering we had a Democrat governor while I was in the House for 6 years before he got there. We should be a team, not attacking each other.
Now, you'll be going back to the General Assembly shortly after this interview, and today is Monday, and the governor plans to finally unveil his budget, and which he did not do during the State of the State address, which frankly is probably just as well. I mean, although he did talk in the State of the State address about proposing more tax cuts. With that in mind, how do you think this whole controversy is going to influence now going forward when the General Assembly is looking at his budget proposal and the tax cut proposal? Will they be able to separate these two, or is it just unavoidable that the controversy is going to affect how people treat his budget proposals?
I think most of us just want to get our work done and hope. And because there's some other House bills and Senate bills calling for tax cuts too, I think that discussion will take place and maybe we will make some progress. Hopefully we can just move forward and get our work done while this all plays out.
What's your thoughts about the tax cuts in general? I mean, with the other state tax cuts from several years ago still going into effect and the new federal tax cuts now going into effect.
I think that we need to be very careful about what we're proposing, and I am one to really favor the lowest taxes we can have, but we still have work to do.
I want to play a clip now from Senate President Pro Tem Ron Richard. He actually said this, I think, on the first or second day of session. He also expressed very similar sentiments, that he is a low-tax person that probably would support reductions in taxation. But he also lives close to Kansas, which went through a pretty terrible budgetary situation after there were tax cuts, but not enough cuts in spending.
And they later had to restore most of it.
This is what the Senate President Pro Tem had to say about that.
I like low taxes too, but I'm going to be very careful to make sure that we're not endangering this institution, this building, the taxpayers, after I'm gone, beyond repair. I don't want a brownback thing.
Brownback, by the way, is a reference to Kansas Governor Sam Brownback, who I think is still the governor of Kansas now. He's in limbo because of an appointment. How does the legislature avoid a situation like Kansas? I know that the last tax cut had quote-unquote triggers that only went into effect when general revenue went up. A lot of the proposals seem a lot deeper than that and don't seem to have those safeguards in place. As somebody who is on the budget committee and has been following this, how can you make cuts, further cuts in taxes without further jeopardizing state services?
Well, I find it interesting that the people that are in front of the tax cut issues are not the people that sit day and night trying to figure out how to craft a budget every year for the state and making the difficult decisions. And we're going to have to be honest about tax cuts, in that if we cut certain taxes, other taxes are going to have to go up, or we won't be able to repair crumbling roads and bridges, or public safety would suffer, or mental health services may have to go away that right now are somewhat discretionary because we are careful with how we spend our money. If we are too short of cash on hand, then those things go away.
Now, there already has been talk that the governor's administration has told department heads to expect $300 million in additional cuts. It's unclear if that means that's in his budget proposal for the coming fiscal year, or if they're referring to the current budget year, which right now income is so-so, but the budget director has said that over the course, based on their projections, the state's going to be taking in about $150 million less than what had been predicted when the budget was drawn up. I'm just interested in what you've heard and how you think that affects things.
That $300 million number is a number that I have also heard, and I don't know if that's inclusive of the effect of the federal tax cuts on the state of Missouri. I've heard that number, I believe, is around $65 million. I don't know if that's included in the $300 million, but I'd like to see how we get our, you know, take care of our state with $300 million less.
And I just want to note for our listeners, we're recording this on Monday morning. The governor will release his proposed budget on Monday afternoon. So check out stlpublicradio.org for more information on that. I'm going to play a clip now from Representative Crystal Quaid. She's a freshman Democratic lawmaker from Springfield. She's on the House Budget Committee. And the question that I asked her is I've now been covering Missouri politics for 12 years. And one thing that I've noticed is there always seems to be these seemingly intractable problems of getting more money to roads, getting more money to higher education institutions, and getting more money to vulnerable Missourians that need health care services. The in-home care situation comes to mind. I asked her if there is enough appetite among Republican lawmakers to make the difficult decisions of trying to get more money to those sectors, especially with the concept of tax cuts floating around. This is what she had to say.
Unfortunately, I can't say that I do. I don't know how much the situation with the governor really even plays into that conversation. It's an election year. We have an election every 2 years in the state of Missouri for the House, and it almost feels like campaign season never stops. And so I think that you are spot on in saying that it's easy to talk about these things and they play well and it works for votes and it works for getting reelected. For people to really dig in and be willing to have a serious conversation about the budget crisis, about the social services we provide, about higher ed and transportation, the things you listed off, that's going to take a lot of work and long time. It's like looking at back at the criminal code changes that we made. That was, you know, 6-8 years in the legislature before compromises were made and there was a bill passed. I think that we're going to have to do the same thing when it comes to really solving our budget situation.
So I know that doing all those things is not, there's no magical solution there, but I'm interested to hear your take on this, because as someone who's lived in Missouri for a long time, I'm seeing all those sectors I just mentioned chronically not being able to get enough money. And after a while, that's going to affect whether people want to live or move here at a certain point. I'm interested to hear your perspective on that.
Well, I think Representative Quaid is correct in saying that this is a process. It's not that we're going to have this concept this year and it's going to all happen by next year. We have to look carefully at how do we replace those revenues that are going to be not coming in to the general revenue if there is a tax cut? And we are not a low-tax state by any means. I think we do have some places to look where we can reduce taxes, but there is going to have to also be a hard look at what is going to replace those revenues, like the streamlined sales tax. That's not a popular decision to make for some people, but as a retailer with a brick-and-mortar store, the competition of online sales without them having any sales tax responsibility for a state has put a lot of states in a hard place.
I mean, I know there's been efforts. I mean, former Governor Jay Nixon, when he was in charge, he pushed several times to try to get sales tax imposed on internet purchases. Do you think the General Assembly may be considering doing that, especially if they're making some trims elsewhere? And ditto for the gas tax, which is one of the lowest in the country.
Right. I do believe in the two Senate bills, streamlined sales tax is part of the package that they're presenting. And as far as the gas tax, that was a sales tax, which...
The 2014 proposal.
Oh, okay. Yeah, not the 2004 that was an actual?
I think what we're talking about now is I think the proposal has been raising the gas tax by 10 cents or so.
Yes.
I think that data shows that there is an appetite for that in the state of Missouri. I think citizens realize we've got to do something, and that's not the total answer either. That's just part of what we need to do the work we need to do.
I mean, do you think that the fact that we didn't make the final 20 on the cut for the Amazon second headquarters, which is called for tens of thousands of good jobs and all that, and some had hoped we at least would make that list. Do you think that's going to be causing any discussion within General Assembly, the fact that neither Kansas City nor St. Louis made the list, or is that something that's just not going to be part of the discussion?
Well, I'm hoping we're going to find out why we weren't on that list before we make assumptions. And I've heard, I believe it's Apple is looking for another place to land too. And
maybe it could be in Oakville. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about that situation, but I think going back to our first topic, how difficult, we talk about the budget, and the budget has to be passed by a certain time. And if it doesn't, there's an automatic special session.
Yeah, early May, yes.
So I've never seen a situation where they failed to pass the budget on time. I know it came close last year, but even though this might be a difficult period, I expect it to go to the governor's desk. How difficult is it going to be to do anything else, especially when it comes to major policy overhauls when the governor is in kind of this limbo period?
I think that's going to be up to leadership. I know in the House, because I am in leadership, I do get to sit down on those meetings. Our plan is to move forward with our agenda that we had before this whole story broke. And hopefully the Senate will do the same. I think we've had some assurance from the Senate that they're going to do business as usual and see what we can accomplish.
It must be difficult to do that, though. I mean, just as a reporter, following every development of this, even when I'm during a weekend when I'm supposed to be with my family, has been incredibly distracting. So I have to imagine that it's tenfold for people who are actually legislating, as you kind of alluded to in the first few minutes.
It is a distraction, which is another reason I think that the governor should consider stepping down. And it's not because he had an affair. It's because of everything that's piled on after it. I mean, the fact that the FBI is now investigating, we have the attorney
general.
There's
an inquiry, but not an investigation.
Yeah, okay, inquiry. Let's emphasize, we don't know if there's an investigation. We know that a couple people have said we have talked to them, but we're not clear who initiated
it. Just to make clear.
And we should go forward, yes.
Right, and that has, as far as I understand, nothing to do with this situation.
Yeah. I do want to touch on another thing that I've mentioned many times, in that the governor and the lieutenant governor do have very different views on certain issues. I mentioned low-income housing tax credits a lot, but it's not just that. I think that Lieutenant Governor Parson would handle the Board of Education situation differently. I think that he probably would have pushed for a solution to the in-home care funding situation. And he has actually come out for a gas tax increase, which is, to me, something I don't know if the current governor would do, because it would be seen as too politically risky. I know this is very speculative because Governor Greitens is still the governor now, and he might be the governor for the next 3 or 4 years. From talking with your colleagues, though, is there just more comfort with Parson becoming governor, not only because of the distraction aspect, but because he seems to have a more defined set of issues he wants to do that may be more in line with what lawmakers want?
I think there's a greater level of predictability with Lieutenant Governor Parsons, because many of us have worked with him and know his style of leadership. Governor Greitens is new in what we do. This is a team sport. We need each other to get anything accomplished. And I don't know where Governor Greitens will be as far as getting our work done, but I think that Lieutenant Governor Parsons certainly would make sure that we move forward.
Now, one of the controversies surrounding the governor, forgetting this other stuff, and this is beforehand, but this has come up again, is the fact that he does have, he's very closely aligned with this nonprofit political group. There was one set up to help raise money before his inauguration. This one was set up right afterwards. We don't know how much it collects. We don't know how the money is spent. We don't know who gives the money. It's in the same building as his campaign operation. He is allowed under the Missouri Ethics Commission. He can be calling people and getting people to to donate to it. I mean, we've run into this with some other politicians. My question is, do you think that the current controversy or scandal might prompt the General Assembly to take a more serious look at requiring these nonprofits to identify their donors if they're doing political activities in Missouri, which is the way it is in some other states?
And I just want to mention for our listeners, you did mention, quote, dark money in your statement.
Yeah,
and you were critical of him doing it. So
actually, that's the reason I brought it up. But
sorry to ruin the magic there, but continue.
This has been something that's been discussed among legislators even before this latest scandal happened. I don't know what the governor meant when he campaigned saying that he would bring transparency to the process and give the voters in Missouri a honest, transparent leadership. I don't know what he meant by that, because this is anything but transparent.
I will just point out that this is kind of separate from what we're talking about, because I'm now talking about non-501c4s. But after Amendment 2 passed, I would classify that Missouri's coordination laws are very weak. I know that sounds opinionated, but when I lay this out, I think it's factual. The Missouri Ethics Commission says that a candidate for office can go to a fundraiser for a PAC, say, raise $1 million for this PAC. And as long as it meets a certain criteria, like it's not meant to be a second candidate committee, they can do that, and that PAC could spend $1 million on their behalf. With the 501c4 situation, and this was a situation before Amendment 2, there is nothing in state law that prevents somebody from raising a lot of money in a candidate account and then donating it to a 501c4. It actually specifically says that they're allowed to donate to a charitable organization. And where I could see that becoming an issue in the future is if there is a municipal or county candidate who can raise unlimited amounts of money, and then they give that money to a 501c4 that's then used for a statewide bid, totally fine under the campaign finance system. So the reason I'm laying this out, along with what Joe said about the 501c4s, do you think that there's any desire among legislators to deal with this coordination issue? Because I've gotten a sense that Democrats are interested in it. Republicans, though, have some misgivings based off various things. I'm interested to hear what your take is on that.
I think anything that makes the process more transparent and more accountable is the direction we should be moving in. And I agree with you. I also don't understand why it's okay to self-fund. So if I can put $1 million into my own campaign fund, I can do that. But if I don't have that capacity, I'm limited to $2,600 per individual or business entity. It seems to me that that's almost like you can buy a seat in the state legislature or anywhere with the current laws.
Now, although that particular thing may be a little more difficult because U.S. Supreme Court has ruled in favor of self-funding several decades ago. I mean, because this has been a controversy. That angle has been a controversy for over 40 years.
But to her point, now with Amendment 2 putting very strict limits on state legislative and statewide candidates, it gives self-funders a pretty enormous advantage.
Right. If I can't write a $500,000 check, then I've got to rely on the much, much smaller donations. It just doesn't seem like it's a level playing field for running for public office.
I mean, I'm not defending it. I'm just saying that particular angle, it may be virtually impossible for the General Assembly to deal with. But I think some of the other things that Jason and I brought up, depending on what the General Assembly wants to do, could be dealt with. I mean, at least there could be restrictions or could be more transparency required at minimum. But I'm not sure. I mean, there have been some conservatives who said that they will file suit. I mean, some heads of some other 501c4s, I'm thinking Greg Keller here, who have said that they will file suit if the General Assembly tries to do that. So I mean, do you think the General Assembly is prepared to get into that? Or do you think you guys are going to be dealing with so many other things this session, it's just not going to happen?
I don't think it's going to happen this session. I think there would already have been a bill pre-filed and a lot of media on moving in that direction if it were going to happen this year. And again, we would need a governor to sign off on that.
Yeah, current governor would probably veto that. We don't know if another governor will. In the last few minutes, I do want to ask, what has been the reaction to your statement? I know that from looking on Twitter, both you and Representative Conway got a lot of plaudits from people that agree with you. But I would not be surprised if some people that support the governor were not as happy with you. I'm interested to hear what the reaction has been.
Yeah, there definitely has been support for both sides of this statement that I made. And I think one of the more public figures in media has a theory that maybe if Governor Parsons were the, if Lieutenant Governor Parsons were the governor, that I would get an appointment. That never even crossed my mind until I heard about that. I just wish people would understand that I did what I did. It's my opinion. If you don't like it, it's okay. But I've had some very disturbing phone calls and recordings, and I wouldn't say threats, but close to it. I just think let's just step back, and everybody's entitled to their opinion as to where we should go with this. But be respectful of each other's opinions. And I think there's far more in favor that I have become aware of having the governor consider stepping down than there is not.
I mean, were some of these, were these anonymous, or do you know who was doing them?
Anonymous. And which, to me, is the most cowardly thing you can do.
And I just want to put a little bit of context for our listeners. I don't know what Representative Conway plans to do next. I think she might have been thinking about doing something on a county level, but she's term limited.
Mm-hmm. You're, so are you.
You're term limited, and I think the next office you may run for is in 2020. So I don't think you're doing this to get attention for your race this year. I just want to make that clear for our listeners that I don't think that either one of you are doing this for attention, because as you mentioned, it was a situation where, again, you probably got a lot of support, but it's not without risk to go against the governor of your own party like this.
Right.
Is that fair to say?
It's very fair to say. And I don't even know if I will be successful with any of my legislative priorities this year. And I've even said to some of the people that I'm working with, if this is really important to you for us to get this through, maybe you need to look at someone else carrying this legislation, because I don't know that there's an appetite from the executive branch to support anything I do. And I understand that, and I knew that going into this. But unfortunately, that's how it is.
Now, looking ahead for yourself, before we end this, it's just kind of what you might be looking at. You had been encouraged at one point to consider running for the U.S. Senate against Claire McCaskill. Right now, it's off in a different direction. But I'm interested if that has influenced as you look ahead. I mean, and this was all coming up before all this stuff.
Right.
So I'm just interested in what you may be looking at.
Right now, I'm just keeping all options open. I don't have to make a decision now. I'm just staying focused on why I'm in Jefferson City. Now through May, I know I'll have to step up by March, the middle of March, if I decide to run for something in 2018. But pretty much everything's on the table.
And if, again, as I alluded to before, if you decide not to run for anything in 2018, Scott Sifton is termed out in 2020. When we last had you on this show, you were a state Senate candidate, but you decided not to do that. Might have been a good decision because Sifton ended up winning. So that's also a possibility for 2 years into the future. Well, I just want to thank you very much for coming in here. I know that this wasn't the easiest thing for you to do, given how much criticism you mentioned that you got. But I really appreciate you stepping before reporters and talking with us. So thank you again.
I do appreciate you listening to what I have to say about this.
For all of our stories, stlpublicradio.org. Follow me on Twitter at Jay Rosenbaum. Follow Joe on Twitter at
Jay Manis. That's J-M-A-N-N-I-E-S.
I believe you can be followed on Twitter at Marcia Hafner. Is there any other way for people to find you on the World Wide Web?
There's a Facebook that I'm not real active on, but
yeah. Not everybody has to be in on social media.
I'm pretty low-key.
We'll be back next time. Until then, so long. Thank you.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.